21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer, research assistant is Laura Cordner. Our engineer is Kristen Hegrick. And you're listening to, well, now Baltimorean Bob Darlington. Different time. Yes, we have a different time with different crimes. Some of the old crimes, of course, too. Well, while 21st Century Radio covers topics the major media refuses to take seriously, we periodically call in a mentor or colleague that updates us on the day-to-day news that our major media usually fumbles the ball on the second yard line. Hey, by the way, how did the Ravens do today? I'm going to be told sooner or later what they did, but I think that game's over a long time ago. Well, joining us for the first hour and a half is Joseph J. Honig, an international consultant to business and government who writes for many publications. Honig can be reached at joehonick, H-O-N-I-C-K, at gmail.com. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Joe.
Thank you so much.
How's your cold? Is it okay?
Well, it's in the nether stages. It must sound like it, too.
Hey, I just heard the Ravens lost.
Yes, they did. I was going to tell you.
Oh, well, okay. 23-20, at least it was close, huh? Well, anyway, Joe, before we get started with specific questions, how would you like to sum up the political atmosphere for America in the world?
It's not good, and it doesn't take a genius to talk about it, because we've lost a lot of ground in terms of our being leadership people. And it didn't begin with Obama. It began with our idea of wading into the Middle East, in Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan and all that business. And it's really a shame, because we didn't look good doing it. And so we have a lot of ground to make up, because we don't look like we're relevant leaders. And a lot of people needed to see us that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think have we fallen very much further behind than we were like 8-10 years ago?
Yes. A few years ago, I wrote an article, now that you bring it up, called The Dangers of Irrelevance. Mm-hmm. For a long time, Republicans or Democrats, even when we had quarrels with the world, we were seen as people who were pretty smart politically and pretty savvy diplomatically. Even when we screwed up, we weren't seen as non-powerful people. We've come through the last, through the invasion of Iraq and on to Afghanistan. We've blown trillions of dollars and quite a few lives. And we're trying to figure out what we gained with all that. And the people in those countries have not grown fond of us in the process. It wasn't more than very long ago that the boss of Afghanistan suggested that we get out. Of course, leave a lot of billions of dollars, get the hell out of the country. Mm-hmm. In Iraq, after it was declared to be a mission accomplished, you will recall?
Oh, I remember. I remember a handsome president standing on.
Well, the only people who benefited from that entire venture were the oil companies, who were able to gain access to the oil fields that our boys fought and died to rehabilitate, and that we were once told would help pay the cost of the war. Instead, we handed it over to the Iraqis, and they were allowed to auction the rights off to the major oil people. And in the process, as we pulled out of our mission accomplished, it's been nothing more than an array of bombings in cities. It's not settled well. So we're trying to figure out what did we gain from that. But the biggest question there and Afghanistan, what were the American national interests involved that took us into this whole array of things? And so it comes down today, and I'm sure we'll get to that, about the Syria-Iran situation, plus a lot of domestic politics. We look a little clumsy, frankly, and I care about that. I don't care if it's Democrats or Republicans. It's the country, but right now we're doing some bipartisan absurdities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's take this situation a segment at a time, if we can. Last time you joined us, we briefly discussed the effects of Edward Snowden's actions in revealing NSA secrets. With the weeks behind us now, how do you assess his actions?
Well, I assess it pretty much the way I did at the beginning. I think he's a fraud. And so many people wanted to make him a hero by opening up our intelligence files and everything like that. If the NSA is overstepping its rightful mission, hell, it should be addressed. And he had the opportunity to be as good as Dan Ellsberg and maybe stay here and talk to the American public and the American media. Instead, what he did is he opted to take a flight. And where did he wind up? But in Russia, which is one of the most depressive people when it comes to opening up information, but also invasive. Now, he said not one word about the Russian intelligence approaches, whether Mr. Putin puts political enemies in jail. He's talked not at all about the other people that may not be nice to us and their own intelligence operations. But he has risked a lot of good lives of people who are involved in the intelligence operation. Now, he's gotten worse by the week, but let me just interject that I believe he'll become a millionaire within the next 24 months by the book that must be getting written at the moment in conjunction with his toady boy, who used to be I forget the name of the paper, in London or Brazil, and Greenwald. And that'll be an accomplished fact, and it'll be a great seller on the marketplace. He will also no doubt be running around the world giving lectures, unless we catch up with him. So he's worsened the situation, and yet the people who say, how could they be doing that? It's not as if there are 3 million people at NSA who can sit around listening to everybody's phone call. And as I said, what triggers a lot of these things, and I can't go much into that, but certain sounds trigger interest in what people are doing. If you take that away, it's a wonderful laugher for people who, in Al-Qaeda and other places, who get away with doing things with very little money. So it's a worse situation now than it was at the beginning. And there are other aspects to it, like, you know, how could he walk away with all that stuff?
Well, how could he walk away with all this stuff? Isn't that really the key here? And how could he do it? And
well,
How was he qualified to do that? What made him qualified to be in this position in the first place?
Well, this is correct. Now, they forget that the outfit that originally got him clear was an outfit called Booz Allen, the consulting outfit. I once wanted to go to work for in my early years. And his clearance was not done by the feds. It was done by some outfit, USIS, I think are their initials. And they were doing thousands of bulk clearances. I don't know how much they were paid for each, but when I was in the service, my clearance had to be done by the feds, and that's the way it should be done. And they made tons of money as other contractors, and about 90 to 95% of the work that Booz Allen does relates to American intelligence work. But very little has been written to probe all this. Main thing that the politicians in Congress have been spending their time on is climbing the backs of NSA's commanding officer and their officials as if they don't realize the intense nature of what these folks do. I'm not telling you that they don't make mistakes or they don't do something stupid once in a while, but the responsibility is quite heavy. And the way the Congress has approached this thing has not helped in terms internationally. For example, the folks in Germany are upset with us. In Brazil, they're upset with us. They've got to be upset with us because all this stuff goes public as if they're not doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't want to admit that they're doing the same thing, so they have to take a stance as they have. And so how could he get away with it? That's a management question that ought to be out in the media as much as any other event. Not whether NSA is probing the clothing sizes of people or what they're talking about for dates, is how can people walk away with files of that kind? And that must, you don't do that by yourself. So the question has to be probed, and I don't hear that addressed. What I hear is a political campaign in Congress.
Again, let's go back to Daniel Ellsberg. Why do you think he didn't do as Daniel Ellsberg did and have the courage to take his claims public or to some welcoming politician?
You know, I can't tell you what was in Snowden's mind. I have very little respect for the guy who's been made a big hero by some folks in a particular area of our society. Because he's not only is he not a hero, he's a coward and a fraud. If he really believes all the things he's been talking about and he's going to continue to expose, there are means by which somebody can come to appropriate politicians or inspector general and express those concerns. That doesn't mean he doesn't take any risks in doing so. But if he believes this is something dangerous being done by his government, he has an obligation to go to the proper authorities. And so he hasn't. And Ellsberg, while I didn't necessarily agree with everything he did, the point was he had the courage to do it. And this guy didn't. And I think he's invested very heavily in his future financially.
In other words, what you're saying is you believe that when you say he's invested heavily in his future, that he's going to be making big bucks, like you mentioned, the selling of his book into the millions of dollars.
Sure.
Right? Okay. Well, that do you think he did not do any of those things because he really didn't trust our government? In the sense that he felt that maybe if he opened his mouth that they just might put him away where he can't speak about anything at all about this? I mean, could he have felt that way? Because that might have been a possibility.
You know, I don't want to be his therapist. I can't look into somebody else's head. I can only assess the actions. As they say, it's not the words that somebody speaks, it's their actions, their deeds. His deeds, his actions, as far as I'm concerned, convict or indict him as what he is or what I think he is. And nobody will ever accuse me of coming from the far right. And it's what can I tell you? I don't know what he thought, but if he thought that, surely there must be somebody in his life to consult with. Or if he is in such a responsible position that he could access all those things, he also was in a position to come to somebody of significance and discuss it.
Well, there's obviously going to be some long-term impacts on his
actions. Absolutely.
And let us take our first break of the hour now. And when we come back, let's address that. Okay. What do you see as the long-term impact of his actions? Because obviously I'm also very concerned about that. We'll be back with our guest, Joe Honig, our special correspondent reporting on the news and perspectives lacking in mainstream media. Email him your feedback at Joe Honig, H-O-N-I-C-K, at gmail.com. Joe Honig at gmail.com.
This is Robert Moss, author of Dreaming the Soul Back Home and other books about getting yourself together and living a deeper, juicier life. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. What a fantastic host he is. He's lively, he's questing. He knows story can be the shortest route between a human being and the truth. Listening to this show, you'll hear many stories, and you might just wake up to the deeper story of your life and find the courage and the will to follow that, and that will change everything.
It's changing everything, guys. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest, Joe Honig, our special correspondent. And, of course, we've been discussing the effects of Edward Snowden's actions in revealing NSA secrets. And, obviously, there's going to be some long-term impact on his particular actions. At least I fear that. What do you think?
Well, the main thing about intelligence or any other business when you're dealing around the world, we don't operate as independent agents. Agents not being sometimes undercover, I don't mean that. We don't operate independently. Anything we do to find out information, to find out what may be going on that may be good or bad for the country, depends very strongly on relationships that we establish with others in the same kinds of fields or relevant fields around the world. And we have to have their confidence that we're not going to run around subverting those relationships. So an awful lot of mending is going to have to be done over the long pool with the people who are very key to our intelligence activities, and I don't want to sound like I'm the inside guy, because I'm not, but this is a logical thing. If we were to operate independently, we wouldn't get a thing done in behalf of our country or against anybody else. So we have to, everything you do in this kind of field has to have, is built on relationships. How we're going to rebuild those, nobody's going to tell me, but I know they have to be done. And that's part of the long-term impact of what he's done. And the cost, not just dollars, but the cost in terms of relationship, confidence, and other factors is going to be high. And we don't know how these go until we can get to a point where we have a sense of reestablishment and confidence abroad as well as here. In the meantime, the Congress has not done a pretty good job in helping to fix all that. Main thing they want to do is target the people. Everybody likes to find the government doing something wrong. Can't blame them. But the point is, in doing so, you've got to be careful about what you join in to do. And so the long-term effect on all of this thing Snowden has done is going to be substantial, even though it's not in the headlines all the time, because it'll go in waves. As other news stories disappear, his will bob up again. And it'll really bob up as Mr. Greenwald does his job for his buddy Snowden internationally and gets all this stuff published. And then it'll really bob up when somebody decides to have the book published and they want to do the promotion on it and some of the stuff they'll put out there. My hope is by then they'll look a little bit more foolish.
Well, does it help for us to point out that other nations are doing the same thing to us?
No, it doesn't hurt to point out that's not the device that's important here. What you're forcing, if you do that, is other nations who don't really want to talk about that kind of stuff themselves are now forced into the public eye, and it makes their own intelligence gathering a little bit more difficult, and they resent the fact that we are serving that stuff up to the surface, because who the hell are we to do that at their risk as well? But we have a right to information, to the truth, but there really is a legitimate thing called classified information, the revealing of which can endanger lives.
Well, let's move away from Snowden right about now. We have a strange and confusing involvement with regard to chemical weapons in Syria, nuclear development in Iran. What's your take on these?
Well, this is another area where, unfortunately, we have looked clumsy. Let's face it, we didn't introduce ourselves into this terrible tragedy in Syria until the chemical weapons all of a sudden came up. And before that, we were kind of in, should we support the rebels? Should we do that? And the president made this grandiose talk about, quote, consequences, close quote, or a strike against Syria. And the 100,000 or so people who were killed and their survivors and the million or so pushed into refugee status kind of thought, hey, I bet he's going to do something. And, of course, he didn't. And
did
so,
that surprise you? Did that surprise you? Did it surprise you,
you
know, that
Obama
didn't do
it? I get surprised every day. I got surprised when we invaded, when we talked about weapons of mass destruction that we couldn't find. I got surprised about selling off oil fields. And now I get surprised about going that far without doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems that Mr. Obama has kind of come a cropper on, when he dumped about $800 million worth of weapons and support into Libya to go against Gaddafi, who had been kind of working with us as bad as he was and a murderer that he was, next thing we find, we have a problem in Benghazi. We have liberal. We didn't know who those rebels were, really, and whether they were friendly. Comes now Syria. It turns out rebels are not one joint army of good guys and good ladies, and many of them are pretty bad actors. So we don't know who is functioning in what direction. But we have sufficient evidence, apparently, internationally, that suddenly the world cares. Suddenly the world cares because of these chemical weapons, which killed reported 1,425 men, women, and children, slightly less than the 100,000 already killed. And all of a sudden we find that somebody's feeding them chemical weapons, and they got to stop that. How quickly the action came from the United Nations that had been sleeping somewhere while all this stuff was going on in Syria, and finally they had an inspection team, and we're sending the Secretary of State, and the President is making more grandiose statements. And what happened as a result of that kind of action? The Assad government says, all right, we're gonna cooperate, we're going to get rid of these chemical weapons, and Iran said we're going to help them do this. What happens but we give them a compliment for, and the word used by one of my old favorites, John Kerry, we compliment them on the alacrity with which they're moving on the chemical weapons. Forget all the stuff that's gone before.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So now we're engaged suddenly after all this time in some discussion of nuclear activity in Iran that's been threatening Israel. And so we don't look like exactly that we know what we're doing. But the hypocrisy of the UN to have been distant from this whole affair for all this time, that doesn't surprise me, because they've been that way on a number of things mm-hmm. that we don't have much time to discuss today, maybe. But the whole affair is very dangerous, and it's a, I hate to use the word, well, I will, it's a time bomb on how we're being played for suckers by Iran. And it's they're wagging our tail by using a lot of PR, both American and otherwise, to have these statements in the media saying, we're really good guys, and mm-hmm. we just want peace. Mm-hmm. And if you just leave us alone, we'll do that. Meanwhile, they continue their nuclear development, and Israel is warned about that. And if Canada were doing the same thing, would we not be a little upset?
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, we don't look very savvy in our foreign affairs, and are certainly not with our dealing with Iran or with Syria. And if I've made this into a more complex matter, let me know.
Well, I don't know if you can make it any more complicated. It's terribly complicated.
Yeah.
And we're all having a hard time.
Well, the problem, one of the big problems is, as major international events or any events like this occur, they get swept away by the waves of new publicizable items that hit the news that people start talking about. like a fat guy who's the mayor of Toronto saying he used crack, and now all of a sudden that's all over the news, while all this bad, tough stuff is going on in Iran. And headlines shift that way so the people don't keep in tune, and also because most people are tired of things that seem to assault their well-being, and they don't want to listen to all that, especially if the NFL is on Sunday and during the week three times. So the bigger complication is what people don't get to know or stay with, and therefore say somebody else will take care of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I find that the UN in general is not very supportive of Israel in just about any issue. And this is a bias of mine. Do you see any problems along these areas?
Well, I call it the United Nations of hypocrisy.
Oh.
There was always a good reason to try to put together some kind of international combine that would work to avoid war or help people where they're hungry. And if I can find a time during the UN's period when they've avoided war or kept us from invading somebody or somebody else, I don't know when that was, but when it comes down to the Israeli situation, and I confess I am pro-Israel, but I'm also pro-human needs. And the hypocrisy, among other things, is if you go back to the events that have occurred against Israel, you will have trouble finding resolutions from the UN so quickly to chastise anybody from the terrorists, the Palestinians, the Saudis, or any of these other people. You will have a great difficulty finding resolutions passed as quickly, or if ever, as they can if Israel, they call it Israel, missteps in some ways. And Israel does things that are wrong. They're a normal country in that respect. We do, Germany does, everybody else does, and there are things for which you can criticize Israel, but not undermine Israel. That's the separate factor. And so I think the UN, I call it the United Nations of hypocrisy.
Well, there aren't too many republics in the Middle East there. And I've always felt that, and I'm certain that other people felt this too, that without Israel over there, I believe we would have had, and it doing what it does, regardless of the mistakes that it makes, they are a clear representative of a republic.
Well, yes, they are. And you see, the thing that you don't find in the news, because in case you're not aware of it, there are a couple of firms in Washington, D.C., who are the major who get millions of dollars a year as the megaphones for the Arab nations.
Correct, yes.
Patton Boggs is the major, and they do what they do is legal. I'm not saying they do anything illegal, but they are powerfully paid, and they're the best operators in that respect. But the point I'm getting at is what you do not hear are the restraints of freedom for women or other
mm-hmm.
things in
Absolutely.
Places like Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yes.
And other countries where women have virtually little rights or an education. You do not hear that Arab nation education resists teaching the Holocaust. You do not hear that if anybody speaks against the government in Saudi Arabia, they go to jail. They suffer consequences.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference in Israel is a lot of people raise hell with the government, and they ought to have that right, just like we do. In any free country, there ought to be that right.
Mm-hmm.
And the discussion that comes up in terms of Palestinian rights and things like they are represented in the Knesset, perhaps not widely, but Arab citizens of Israel have Israeli rights. Now, to the extent that there may exist some prejudices or biases among certain groups of people, it's not universal, but it may exist. How can I tell you about things in the United States or elsewhere where certain groups don't get together very well? But that's what takes progress. And Israel has only been in being since 1948, And in the process of getting into being named by the United Nations, they were attacked by a half a dozen countries who were sabotaging the United Nations designation, and they had to overcome that. But you didn't find any major UN military going against those countries. So the hypocrisy that exists there, and Israel does operate as a republic, an imperfect country like the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, life is imperfect from the standpoint of radio because we've got to take a break here.
Okay.
Joe, well, I understand you're hard at work on a difficult book we touched on before on the defense industries. We need to get in that.
I don't want to give away all the secrets.
Well, well, you're supposed to.
I mean my secrets.
All right. And we'll be back with Joe Honig, our special correspondent. And by the way, again, you can email him for your feedback, joehonick@gmail.com.
What's the meaning of this? What are you going to do with us?
I'm taking you to the lost city, to my master.
Pogo! Come, Pogo! Ayuga!
Well, that's from a 1935 movie called The Lost City. And by the way, you can stay tuned for the end of next hour when we interview the owner of the Lost City Diner in Midtown Baltimore and our guest for, well, I guess almost another hour is Joe Honig. And we've been talking about something that's bothered me a great deal is that there are so many different problems that we have economically. But there's one part of our world over here in America that seems to have trillions or billions anyway of dollars, and that's the defense industries. And Joe, I understand you're hard at work on a difficult book about the defense industries. What can you tell us about it without letting any of the big
ones out? I don't want to give it all away.
Well, just give half it away.
But every day I get the contracts awarded by the Department of Defense, and I only get those that are above $7 million. They indicate that at the bottom. I don't know how many are below $7 million, but I get billions of dollars indicated every single weekday of every week. What's of great interest to me, among the many things, is the huge defense industry lobby that, first of all, let me say there is no, I don't know if you're familiar with something called the Standard Industrial Code. Every industry has a Standard Industrial Code at the Department of Commerce, so they can measure rises and falls and, you know, how these industries are doing. But that's not the case. There is no standard industrial code for defense industries. For example, today, there are Department of Defense contractors who now do the KP in the military that the service people used to do. And so they have kind of organizations with many millions of dollars of contracts to do KP. We also have civilian contractors doing a variety. In other words, there's the massive amount of subcontracting out to civilian organizations to do many things that don't have much to do with, if we get into a war, how we can shoot our way out of it or bomb somebody or anything like that. And theoretically, that's supposed to make our service people more available to do what they do. That's a questionable practice. Another example is we have one contract that was awarded some months ago for over $600 million to a marketing outfit to promote recruitment of men and women into the services and also to promote retention by people who might want to get out. And those are only some examples. Other contracts are either in the hundreds of millions or the billions for a variety of weapons and stuff like that. But let me give you an example that the people who are the bigger cost cutters and everything else haven't talked about until recently again. The F-35 airplane that's supposed to do stuff that no other airplane in the world has ever done, do it faster, spin on a dime, and everything else, and they haven't been able to make it work. But now there's another effort to get it going again, and the planes, if they buy them, about 2,400, I understand, will cost $550 million apiece.
Oh, my God.
You hear what I said? At today's prices. Now, some years ago, these were offered by some aircraft manufacturers, and the Air Force said, we don't really need that. But there are a lot of people who like to have defense contractors operating in their cities, counties, states, and so forth. They said, you really do.
Yeah, that's right.
And so now, in order to accomplish the new aircraft needs, what do we find that you probably have not seen in the paper because it was said, but not loudly? Lockheed and Boeing want to not merge, but partner up to produce our aircraft needs. Now, if nobody questions this, this is a massive kind of, cornering of a market by the two single biggest defense contractors we have. Now, if you were doing somewhere 46% of your revenue or more because of people ordering and ordering and ordering all kinds of stuff, airplanes and sending the troops and aircraft, would you lobby to stop it?
No, you wouldn't.
Okay. Would anybody? I mean, and that doesn't mean all these contractors who are getting these contracts are bad people, because if you have an opportunity to do business and the government says, heck, we'll do business with you because we want you to do this, you say, fine, I'll take your money. Except when they say to the government, we'll take your money, that's yours and mine.
Mm-hmm.
And most people have no idea that a lot of these things going on, or on the counter side, how much fraud is implicit in a lot of these defense contracts. And rather than believe me for what I'm saying, all you have to do is go to your computer, and everybody's got a computer, and bring up Department of Defense fraudulent contractors. And you will find some very interesting names defrauding the Department of Defense. And when the Department of Defense is defrauded, Bob Hieronymus and Joe Honig are defrauded, and all your families and everything else. Right?
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And remember, some time ago when we first got started talking about things, I pointed to how certain industries have gotten away with things that they know they're going to get penalized later, but they make a ton of money in the meantime. Comes right now, all of a sudden, it looks like it's off the point, but it's 2 points. J.P. Morgan and all these other banks and financial institutions are now paying hundreds of billions of dollars in fines, because when I talked about those subprime mortgages, they weren't called subprime, I called them phony mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people were put into foreclosure because the old thing was no money, no problem, and they got mortgages, because the banks and the financial houses doing that knew they could sell them off right away to Fannie Mae.
Mm-hmm.
So now that they're being fined hundreds of, or sometimes $100 billion or billions of dollars, that is a chicken feed in relation to the profits they made till they got caught. So comes now some things that people are being lobbied for in the defense industries. No matter what they get, they're going to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a taxpayer-subsidized industry, at a time when we don't want to feed people because we say that's socialism, or set up health care for most Americans who might not be able to afford it. That area is the most heavily, the most heavily lobbied of any we have. And it's a very, it's all legal. Is it ethical?
Well, I don't think it's ethical.
If I sound excited about it, I am.
Well, I'm excited to read the book on it.
Well, it's going to take several months to get this done.
Well, that's
I hope I survive the effort.
Well, you that's not too long.
I'm not talking about whether I could live that long. I probably get a few people upset with the information.
Well, they should be. They should be, because you know, so much has been made about the economy. You know, my wife, Zahara, likes to refer to our economy really as the death economy because of the emphasis upon the military and the kind of money that's being spent. $550 million per plane, and what they wanted how many? 100?
2,400.
2,400.
Now, not in 1 year, of course.
Oh, yeah, but still... that's at least a half a billion dollars.
Isn't I want to make something clear in all this.
Yes?
The military is a victim of a lot of this. I'm a guy who had my own 14 years of regular Army Reserve, and I have a lot of respect for the people who get into the military who have to do jobs you and I want to do today. So I don't want to make the military the... whatever you want to call it, or the lobby. Well, they do have their own lobby. But any of the political people doing all this, with certain exceptions of what we, what Ike warned about the military-industrial complex. But I don't want to dishonor the military as if they invented this whole thing.
Well, then who do we hang this on?
I think we hang it on politicians in Congress. And it doesn't matter whether they're Democratic or Republican. And we do have people in the military who are geared up at senior levels to lobby for something more and more in power because, to put it bluntly, some of these folks are looking for jobs when they retire or get out of the military.
Well,
those are not sergeants or lieutenants or corporals.
Mm-hmm. And that's linked, of course, to what has been called the revolving door.
Right.
Related to the defense industries, how much of a revolving door do we really have? Is this
exaggerated? We have a massive revolving door situation, and there's a guy from the Boston Globe named Brian Bender, who a couple of years ago got a Pulitzer, did an outstanding, and I'm going to refer to it in what I'm doing, an outstanding job on the revolving door of colonels and others from the military being solicited on their retirement to come into the to their corporations and help with the lobbying because they carry those references whatever you want to call it as military people to help on Capitol Hill. And actually the military services that a lot of people don't realize have their lobbying offices right in a congressional building mm-hmm. on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. So this revolving door is a major piece of business. And a lot of the folks who, I would urge people to look up Mr. Bender's revolving door series. This is one I can't take credit for, but I'm going to relate it to other activities. I don't know if you remember General McChrystal.
No, sir.
Who was fired by the president over there from his, he said something nasty the president Obama didn't like, and he fired him. And he's now the chairman of Siemens Corporation. You know who they are?
No, sir.
Big outfit.
I know they're a big outfit, but I don't know who they are.
Well, they're a big defense contractor as well. And they're a foreign company, but they have American operations as well. And he's got himself a heck of a job.
But would you consider that to be unethical?
Well, I think it borders on it. But I can't blame a company for trying to get somebody who can go lobby for us and get us business. I blame it that they're in the Congress and the machinery that awards contracts for letting it get out of hand. In fact, I've quoted one of the best government executives we ever had who served both George Bush and Barack Obama as Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, who's now become the president of the Boy Scouts, by the way. Mm-hmm. But Bob Gates was one of the best respected executives I can think of. And he, in testimony, which I have in my files, said some months ago that this whole business of dealing with defense contractors has gotten totally out of hand. And I don't find anybody investigating how it's gotten out of hand, because look at the efforts we take to keep Boeing in the Seattle area, and then the people in South Carolina are taking to try to get them away, and this goes on all over the country, which is a reason I also wrote an article, is can we really afford peace?
That's
and what
right.
that would impact to all these defense industries.
Yeah, that was an excellent article.
Yeah.
It really was. It really moved me.
A lot of people didn't like that.
Well, I know, but regardless of that, well, I don't like it from the standpoint of what the conclusion is. However, I mean, you know, the problem is you've got to, if you don't resolve these issues, I'm afraid our country will continue to split from the standpoint of as we move towards more and more states deciding that they think they should be withdrawing from like Texas or
well,
I know if they tried to do it, economically they would probably have the hardest time in the world, because when you take a careful look at their economy and you look at their educational and then you look at the textbooks that they have down there in Texas, it's just amazing. It's another country. It's not more or less, as far as I'm concerned, a pretty dumbed down
area. Bob, that's part of the complexity of America. They're not going to ever pull this kind of stuff off, and the news releases and all that stuff is great business for PR flackery. It's a kind of thing that gets into the news, and the news plays with it because they're waiting for the next news event. And, I mean, look in the last week or so with this terrible, one of the worst tragedies in world history that happened in the Philippines, and I'm looking at hours worth of the fat mayor of Toronto on TV.
That's true. And we've got to stop here with the fat mayor and return next hour with our guest, Joe Honig. And we're going to move in the direction of what we already talked about, Gates, but how all of this stuff that we've been talking about affects our reputation abroad. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Stimulating talk around the clock and breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Lister.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney, the sky ain't it's kind of yellow, you know it's true.
It's so hard to figure what it's all about.
When you're outside's in.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus. My executive producer is Laura Kortner. Our engineer is Kristen Hagerick, and you're listening to the greatest rock group ever in the whole wide world, Traveling Wilburys. And were they talking about our environment? You're damn right they were talking about our environment. And that that particular song was about 15 years old. It's just amazing how many people just cannot see that our weather has indeed changed. And it is going to affect the rest of the planet a great deal. And I'm not very appreciative of all the money that Exxon dumped into the Tea Party and everybody else, and to make sure that those folks were educated to think there's no such thing as global warming. Wow, what a big mistake that is. Well, our guest is Joe Honig, and he's joined us. Joe, you've joined us for a couple of years now, right?
Yes.
Yep. Not for very long periods of time, because I'm not on that often. But the most important thing is I need to obviously be kept updated on these things. I don't have enough time to go into any details the way I used to 30, 40 years ago when you do the kind of stuff I do. But moving away from the foreign affairs and military matters, no one can minimize the confusion created by the controversial start of the so-called Obamacare program. What are your comments on that?
Well, I just wrote an article called Welcome to the Theater of the Absurd about how everything has been handled. But let's go back to the roots of things. Number one, there is no such thing as Obamacare. And unfortunately, the Democrats have been as silly in continuing to use the name as the Republicans have in a pejorative fashion.
Yeah.
It's the Affordable Care Act that was passed in Congress and pushed up before the Supreme Court and rendered constitutional. Now, I can't tell you that what's in it altogether and that it's wonderful or anything else. What I can tell you is that there is some need somehow to devise a health program in a wonderful country like America that makes it possible for anybody to be treated when needed in terms of health and medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we have millions of people who aren't. I don't know if this is the right act. I do know that the way it has proceeded has not been good for most people, for anybody. But one of the fascinating things is that it seems that the pharmaceutical field, insurance field, many of these people, although outwardly raising hell about it, have embraced it as a good profit maker. I'm not sure I understand all the details, but you don't hear a lot of those folks out making terrible statements. And one of the reasons that I think this may be the case is what I call the corporatization of American medicine. Many people don't realize that all the people you used to see as privately operating physicians in specialties and otherwise really are very often, not altogether, are paid people within big corporations, one of which is Sutter, another is another name, but they are employees.
Mm-hmm.
And they do pretty well. I wish my family doctor did as well. So there is an increasing corporatization of American medicine, and I can't tell you it's good in the long run, but there are a lot of questions that need to be asked. So coming back to the what you called Obamacare, unfortunately, the Democrats keep using that name, so when they polled the American public, are you for Obamacare? And 60% said no. Then they said, how do you feel about the Affordable Care Act? 70% said yes.
That's right. Yeah,
but, it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it.
Yeah, well,
so what we are caught up in now is massive confusion. And worst of all, let's say that there is controversy over the act itself and the program, but you're ready to go to the public with it, you better be ready. And if you're not, I mean, look at the problems just on an airplane Boeing ran into with the 787.
Oh,
they haven't
yes.
solved all those problems yet with hundreds of millions of dollars. But we're supposed to tell people in a simple, straightforward fashion, here's what you do, here's how you do it, and we're ready to serve you. And that wasn't done.
Well, it was certainly a miserable beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just amazed that it was not looked, checked up on. The Obama administration didn't check up on these individuals that were running it, because obviously I don't think they were capable of doing the kind of job they said they were doing or going to do.
When you put on a play, you have rehearsals. You try out everything you're going to do first, right?
Right.
And if you're going to have a massive program like this, you have test runs. Let's see where the problems are. I never heard the word glitch used so much in my life as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I am sure that any major social program ever introduced in America had its glitches. Social Security, which is absolutely necessary. It's not really Social Security as much as it's called the old age and retirement or something like that.
Right.
But when that was first introduced, you got to believe believe there were major campaigns against it.
Yeah, the
country was going to become communist.
Well, the Republicans led that, though, right?
Yes, they did.
A lot
of the folks in certain parts of the country who may have been registered Democrats didn't help either. We're not universally good or bad because we're Republicans or Democrats. There's just certain people doing things that want to disrupt. But there was an expectation that this couldn't be simple. But the expectation should have been, rightfully, that there were enough test runs, if only regionally, to see where the problems. Everything has a problem when it's introduced.
Mm-hmm.
So let's find them before we go public. And that didn't happen.
No, it didn't.
That's unfortunate because it's unfortunate for the people who probably need it most.
Well, indeed. When you take a look at what just the red states in general, and take a look at the healthcare systems within the red states, especially, I'll go back to Texas, it's pathetic. It's almost as pathetic as their educational institutions.
You mean for the needy?
Yeah, well, not just for the needy, but I mean, I believe from the statistics that I've seen that Texas has had a reputation for a long time that they just don't believe in insurance. There's been a lot of interesting articles come out on that, but I don't want to get down that too much. But Texas is just one of those amazing states that so much is going on in that I find primitive. Let's put it that way.
Well, at the same time, I have to be fair, and you have to be fair. Some of the best medical research and facilities in the country are right there in Houston, and there's an awful lot of important medical stuff that happens. I can't address about the insurance thing because it would seem to me the insurance industry happily lobbies in every state very powerfully, and I can't address Texas, but I do know, in fairness, they have some fine medical facilities there, and so I'm unable to address that specifically.
There are many people there that just do not have insurance.
Yes.
And especially health insurance, and it's not a big...
Correct.
To them, it's not something that is necessarily something that they want to demand or need, but they do. They do.
Well,
I just find that their educational system has to be unbelievable. Was the world created 6,000 years ago, Joe?
I have no idea.
Of course it wasn't. Of course it wasn't. When you take a look at their textbooks in regards to so many different things and other areas, I'm not very proud of their educational systems. I'm going to drop that, to hell with it.
You know, I don't want to dwell on Texas because we have a national situation that needs to be addressed. And what a lot of folks were arguing about, particularly the quite conservative area, is that people would be forced to buy insurance under the Obama plan, under the Affordable Care Act. But they would be able to get it whether or not they have passed, previous records of health mm-hmm. needs. But they would be required to buy insurance and get insurance so that everybody is covered. That's why I don't hear a lot of insurance companies really bitching about this. And the idea that people say that's un-American, well, it isn't, because you're saying to people, look, you're going to need help somewhere along the line. Pay for something. Put something into the pot so you feel responsible for what you're going to be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems that keeps many people, particularly at the poverty level, and not all the way down at the poverty level necessarily, from getting medical treatment is because they can't get it. They can't afford it. And or even if a place will take care of them, they don't believe they could get it, and they're embarrassed to admit what their situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff like cancer, stroke, and everything else at lower income levels. And when you say lower income levels, I also have to suggest there are a lot of what we used to call middle-income folks who may not be employed or may not get medical insurance at the office who can't afford it because they got families.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very complex thing. I'm not sure that the way the Affordable Care Act was introduced and made so complex and so complicated and so many pages did its job and could not have been done better. I merely state the need, and this was an attempt to meet that need, but there's been a lot of clumsy stuff done. So that's brought us all to the confused state that we are today. But this is America. We got to care about people.
Well, I agree, obviously, but the unfortunately, I'm looking at in the mornings, waking up, looking at CNN, MSNBC, etc., in which they just showed a map of the states in which the Affordable Health Care Act is not doing well, and they happen to be in, where do you think? All red states.
Well, you see, I'm you and I have never argued about anything, but I'm hesitant to deal that way. I believe there are a lot of people trying to throw rocks in the way of it getting being gotten done. I don't doubt that for a minute. And I know there are places when it doesn't work right away, but I can name you a whole bundle of programs of major consequence in this country that the day they started ran into problems.
Of course.
And we should have known better by having had a test rehearsal of intensity before the day we opened the doors to it. And we didn't do that. So because it was inevitable that a program of this dimension and massive nature would have something screwed up somewhere because people were doing it. And unfortunately, political people were doing it and demanded it be done right now, and we need this. And of course we need it, but we need to do it correctly. And there were people who fought it, people who got in the way of it. And I want to say something that I hadn't suggested that we might talk about. Both Democrats and Republicans have a responsibility to the people. And there should be certain services that shouldn't carry with it partisan labels, and that is the health of the country. But a lot of people forget that the Congress, when the Republicans took over the Congress a couple of years ago, took over the House of Representatives, a very, very important body, the morning after the election, both Mr. Boehner and Mr. McConnell and from the Senate declared they had two missions. Now, from now on, that was a couple of years ago, and I've written about this. One mission was to topple the president. And the second mission was to resist anything Democrats might bring forth. And it's provable. I've written about it. And not one statement in a victorious party after the election said, we have to figure out the problems of the nation and find out how we can work together to solve them. That wasn't said in one sentence at all that morning. So here we are. And what we're embroiled in, sounds like Abraham Lincoln, now we're embroiled in a whatever conflict or whatever it is, where neither party wants to give an inch when you have national concerns and the need. And it may be, as some have suggested, that the president does not know how to pull people together. I can't address that right now, but there is that need of assertion rather than people calling each other names like kids.
Well, that's true, but I can't agree with you from some of the origins of this, because indeed what you stated is correct, that they had two, the Republicans had two important things to do as far as they were concerned. And regardless of what Obama did, they were going to oppose him no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Well, That, as far as I'm concerned, is not America. And it's you just don't do that kind of thing in regards to reason. We have moved totally away from reason. and reasoning and compromise and working together. And the petite people, when you take a look at them, especially people like a Sarah Palin or whether our media keeps trying to tell us that the Tea Party's time is over, that they've basically shot their wad. That's dead wrong.
Yes, the
Tea Party will never give up because the fundamentalists within the Tea Party believe something that they do not discuss ever, and that is the separation of church and state, which they are absolutely opposed to. And when you take a careful look at Sarah Palin and all the Jesus schools, and you remember those things from 8 years ago, they were developing children in armies. Armies of children.
Mm-hmm.
These are Christians, supposed Christians, who are 8, 9, 10 years old, put them in a uniform and teach them how to hate anyone that's not a Republican. Jeez a whiz.
Well, those are not good Christians.
Well, they're not good people.
Right. So just to put the Christian label, there are people
I know, but
who adopt that. And I frankly don't take a serious look at Sarah Palin. I think she looks like Tina Fey still.
Well, yeah.
Whatever her program was. So I don't take her seriously.
But
I think the Tea Party should have the right to raise hell because they keep a lot of PR firms making money. But it's America, and they're free to think the way they want.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other issues, as we don't have much more time, I think one of the major deficits in America is how few people are involved, informed, or active in the very government or politics, even at the local level where they can have access, to affect what happens ultimately to their own lives. And I know people can say, I work all day, I'm tired, and everything else. I'm a kid out of the slums of Baltimore, and my father had a confectionery that he built into a deli, and nobody would run for Congress in our district unless they stopped by my dad's deli. Now, we were involved because my parents came from Ukraine. They knew what happens when you don't have any influence, and if you don't have any influence when you have a right to have it and don't use it, you have a problem. And this is... we have it really politically easy here, and then when something happens, we want to know why the hell that happened. And this is a major deficit from people who don't vote. When you look at how few people, the percentage of how few eligible voters even vote for the President of the United States, you got to know that's also a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I did an article some time ago that did get some attention, and that is public apathy can be the death of democracy. And as corny as that may sound, if you ain't involved, you don't get the benefit.
Well, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. I wish we did have time to talk about a few other things here, but I want to go back to one thing that we touched on a little earlier in the minute or so we got left. What's your take on Secretary of State John Kerry's comments that Israel might be responsible for a third infantada if his efforts fail?
He did worse than that. In a closed meeting with senators, he said, stop listening to Israel. Now, there's only one person, one country in the United Nations that never stopped voting for America and never asked for one American to ever die for them in any combat. They take their own thing. John is a guy that I campaigned for very heavily some years ago when he wanted to get the nomination for president. He was a victim of those characters who wrote a fraudulent book when it was found to be fraudulent about his service, and a guy I liked very much. And I saw when he was made Secretary of State a great opportunity to overcome some of the other problems I saw in the administration. I regret deeply that he has been a major disappointment, and his running around the Middle East saying things he should never have said has only added to controversy, and I will bet you there are a lot of people laughing in Iran and maybe even Syria, not because he's a disloyal guy. he just hasn't been very, well, I guess the word is bright, how he's handled his running around. And his impact, his insulting Israel, may be a reflection of his boss. I don't know, but it's not. It's dangerous, actually.
When you say a reflection of his boss, Obama, that's what you're
boss.
Referring to, right? Now,
that's his boss.
Do you have... could you say anything about that in a minute or so that we have? That you believe that Obama is certainly not necessarily balanced in regards to Israel?
I can say that absolutely, and I said that in 20 seconds.
Oh, yes. Well, that's about as much time
as we have. The problem is some major media like the New York Times are not either.
Oh, that's correct. Well, I would have expected it now, the Wall Street Journal, but I didn't expect that from the New York Times.
Well.
And I think you know why I'd say that about the Wall Street Journal and what, and who really runs that newspaper.
Mr. Murdoch.
Yep. I think he is some character, all right.
He
Joe,
used to be my Bible in journalism school. Not anymore.
Well, Joe, thank you for joining us again on 21st Century Radio. And we, unfortunately, we seldom disagree about very much.
We don't really disagree on the point you made.
Well,
it's a matter of degree always.
Yeah.
And I don't say things for approval. I say things hopefully will raise questions with people, not to agree with me, but to think.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to your book when it comes out.
All right, my friend.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and thank you for joining us. And that's Joe Honick, our special correspondent, reporting on the news and perspectives lacking in mainstream media. You can email him your feedback at joehonick@gmail.com, and I look forward to him rejoining us again in the future. And when we return, John Rutkus. I haven't been told how to pronounce that last name, but John, that's his John R., is going to be joining us, the owner of the Lost City Diner in Station North, Baltimore at 1730 North Charles Street.